Hi, we're Josh
and Arielle Wamsley,
owners of Green Valley Tree LLC, based in North Windham.
We're proud to sponsor Connecticut East this week and to serve the communities of Windham and New London counties with our tree removal and plant healthcare services.
Visit our website at greenvalleytreeworks.com for a full list of our services or give us a call on 860-234-4041. We look forward to hearing from you.
Why Long Island Sound could be off limits to residents after a dangerous surge in bacteria in the water. And with remote and hybrid learning the new normal, how that affects the region's police training new officers. Plus a look at other stories making the headlines from around the region. This is Connecticut East This Week. Hello, I'm Brian Scott Smith. It seems everywhere we turn these days, there's something that could impact our health. We're all still living with COVID-19, and here in Connecticut, we're also watching out for mosquitoes carrying disease, as well as ticks with Lyme. So when the state's Department of Public Health issues a warning about the waters in and around Long Island Sound carrying a dangerous bacteria, we reached out to them and their experts to find out more. So joining me on the podcast is Paul Gasick, who's an epidemiologist for the state of Connecticut. Paul, thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Now, we've got a story that's been put out by the Department of Public Health, who you work for, with regards to concerns for shoreline towns, and it's to do with a bacteria in salt or brackish water. Tell us a little bit more about this, and why is it of such a concern?
Yeah, thank you for the opportunity. So we wanted to warn residents along the shoreline areas, as well as residents throughout Connecticut that go to the shoreline, of a potential danger, and that is being exposed to this water. This is either salt or brackish water. Brackish water being the mixture of fresh and salt water that come together due to an unusual high number of Vibrio vulnificus infections. And in July, we had one. In August, we had four. And normally we would see seven in a 10-year period. So we have five over the course of a month and a half. This is an extremely unusual as well as severe infection.
Is there any information at the moment that you have that is telling you why we're seeing this increase in what you're saying is normally a fairly rare event?
It's an excellent question. We don't have any certainty, but we have some hypotheses. One being 80% of vibriosis, which is the infection caused by Vibrio bacteria, occurs during May and October. So 80% of people who get this infection is between those months. That's because that's when the water is warmest. And we know that the warm water amplifies the bacteria, therefore causing an increase in bacteria. So people are more likely to have more exposures as there's greater abundance of it in the water around this time. We wanted to warn people, not just people who swim, but people who go walking on the beaches may fall down and get a cut, people who fish, people who have exposure to water, people who are boating, of this, just so they're aware of it. Therefore, if they were to get wounded, you know, have a little wound or something of that nature, they could watch it. We want to look out for wound infections. So some of the signs and symptoms that you should look for: is your wound getting red? Is it sore? Is it warm? Is there any discharge or discoloration? These are signs of an infection. And we just want you to be aware so you can talk to your medical provider if you see any of these signs. And the other thing is, if you have a pre-existing wound, you want to make sure it's covered with a Band-Aid, waterproof Band-Aid, if you go in the water. And if you don't have to go in the water and you have a wound, let your wound heal before going in.
Now, I just want to be absolutely clear for obviously the people that are listening to this. When you say go into the water, there is mention of Long Island Sound. So are we actually talking, you know, the beach water, as it were, or are we talking about pockets of water and lakes? Can you just give us that like definitive so that people understand what they really need to be looking out for?
Absolutely. Thank you for clarifying. Right. We are specifically talking about Long Island Sound. We do not have definitive knowledge of one area of the sound, so we're going very broadly with saying area of Long Island Sound. So that is the water of the sound or the areas that go, the little rivers and tributaries that go in that are brackish. There's a mixing of fresh and salt water. That's where this bacteria lives.
Now, the other thing is, as well, as you said, you're being slight broad brush about it, and we fully understand that. I understand from information that has come out that there has been a patient from the Fairfield area, the Middlesex County, and the New Haven County areas. Are you seeing it anywhere else?
Yeah. So at this point in time, we only have five individuals who have unfortunately had this infection. And that's why we're being broad, because three different counties. So it's not specific to one area. So exposures are just in the sound. Once again, people who are swimming, crabbing, boating, walking. And we want to make people aware of that.
And just how dangerous is this particular infection? I mean, could somebody potentially die from it if they didn't get treatment? And is treatment also available?
I can tell you that all five of these individuals were hospitalized. They all survived. It is a very severe infection. So we're talking about Vibrio vulnificus. And one in five people who develop this ultimately die. It is, once again, a rare illness, but can lead to intensive care and limb amputation.
In the press release that's been sent out by the Department of Public Health, so far the five people that sadly, as you say, have been infected are in the age group of about 49 upwards. Is it something that is this age group needs to be aware of, or is it something that all age groups should be aware of? Because we're always being told, you know, whether it's COVID or whatever, oh, well, you know, this condition affects this particular sort of like part of society, or you know, if you've got a pre-existing condition. I mean, is this the same sort of thing, really? It doesn't matter who you are, you should just be watching out.
You should be aware and you should be watching out. I can say that, you know, the median age was 73, with the range between 49 and 85. So that's the individuals of these five that we're describing here who have become ill. There are some things that people should be aware of, and that is anyone could get this illness, but there are people who are more likely to get it or to have more severe complications. And those people are people who have liver disease, cancers, diabetes, or immunocompromised diseases. They also are people who are receiving immunosuppressed therapy for treatment of a disease, as well as taking some medications that could lower your stomach acid. You know, if you fall into one of those risk categories, you just want to be more aware. Everyone should be aware, but these are the people who can have more severe complications.
And also I'm reading in here as well that two of the patients ended up getting septicemia, which of course that is a very, very dangerous situation indeed, isn't it?
Yes, it is. Absolutely.
Can you give us any advice as well on, you know, how we can reduce our chance of getting Vibrio wound infection? Have you got any tips that you can give to people who are listening?
Yeah, absolutely. The first is, if you have a wound, once again, you want to keep your wound covered. If you have to go into the saltwater or brackish area of Long Island Sound, it should be a waterproof bandage. When you get out of that water, you want to take that bandage off and wash it with soap and water, put a new bandage on. If you sustain a wound while swimming, you want to thoroughly clean it. And then if you've had any recent surgeries or have piercing or tattoos, we want to just say you should probably stay out of the water till that area heals.
And also, I believe there's some advice as well for people about, you know, washing the wounds. And I suppose that's just general good hygiene as well. Just to remind us about, you know, the good hygiene aspect of washing out wounds.
Yeah, that's correct. You can use any soap and water product. You want to thoroughly clean any type of wound that you have, as well as, you know, I know the segment is not about, you know, respiratory viruses, but hand washing is very important. And so you want to thoroughly clean. So sometimes when you wash your hands, you should probably wash the wound, do the same thing, sing happy birthday while you're doing it to thoroughly clean it.
It's an interesting and obviously very important story, which is clearly why we're talking to you about it. But there's a strange sense of irony here, as, you know, often you use like salty water to clean wounds, yet now we're being told you have to be mindful, obviously, if you do come in contact with, you know, like salty or brackish water.
Yeah, that is correct. Absolutely. I want to just thank the opportunity once again to get the information out to the public so that they're aware this is a potential danger that is rare and it's not something we commonly see. We are uncertain of why we're seeing increases in number of infections. So just be mindful. Remember, if you go into the water and you have a wound, cover it. If you sustain a wound, when you get out, wash it, cover it, and be mindful of it. And if you notice any of these evidence that I kind of laid out, signs of an infection, you want to seek care. So call your medical provider.
Great advice. And Paul Kasich from the state of Connecticut, ever so many thanks for helping us out with, as I say, this very important story. And thanks for being on the podcast with us.
Thank you again.
And for more information about Vibrio vulnificus infections, visit the CDC website at cdc.gov/Vibrio. Since COVID-19 impacted all of our lives, we're all learning new ways to work, educate ourselves, and more. Remote learning has become the norm for many school students, but learning doesn't stop with just them. It affects many other industries and organizations. Take, for example, police departments and their need to train new recruits who would normally stay at the state's police academy. I caught up with Waterford Police new recruits Christian Sharon and Christopher Robinson and Training Sergeant David Furlan to see how they are training during COVID-19.
We're talking about, specifically obviously to Christian and Christopher, the fact that you are new recruits to the Waterford PD. I suppose the first question is, in light of everything that's going on at the moment, and obviously not being specific, but why did you want to be a police officer?
Plain and simple, I just want to be part of the solution, not the problem. I want to serve my community.
Have you got anybody in your family at all? Or?
Yeah, I don't have anybody in my family. I'll be the first police officer in my family. So that's kind of exciting as well.
Absolutely. And Christian?
Yeah, this is all I ever wanted to do. I'm fresh out of the military. And just as if he said, I like to serve my community and give back.
So you say you're fresh out of the military. I mean, I've dealt with a lot of sort of like military people in the past, and it's a case of they miss family. So is this thing about getting back into family again, because the police are a big family? Was that sort of like a big draw for you?
Oh, yes. Military is like brotherhood, and I feel like even, you know, me being here, I feel that already.
Now, Dave, you're the training sergeant for Waterford PD. Yes. Difficult, challenging times, I'm guessing, for multiple reasons. I mean, COVID-19, we know all about it. We've heard all about it. And then we forget that it affects absolutely everybody, including the police department, and how you not only do your jobs, but obviously the training of the recruits. Just tell us a little bit about some of the challenges it's causing.
You know, with the recruits, obviously, one of the previous classes in the middle of COVID, dead stop on a Friday, we were told starting Monday they're back with you. We'll train them via Zoom, but you've got to do a lot of the practical stuff on your own. So it kind of put us on our heels, and I had to find officers that were certified in certain areas to do some of the training ourselves, as well as the class that Christopher's in now. They're all through Zoom. So all their classroom is sitting here in an office that we had to set up for them. They do Zoom meetings, but then they go out remote for training, and we have to supply instructors to a lot of the different trainings as well. But also the training in-house with all the current certified officers. We have mandates that we have to do every year, as well as a certain amount of hours every three-year recertification process. But all of our in-person training got shut down throughout the state, and the state originally would not recognize online trainings for credit. So it left us in a scramble to try to kind of do some of our own. We're slowly getting back into in-person trainings, and now Post-C, which is the post-council who governs law enforcement, municipal law enforcement, they've now approved a couple of vendors to do online training for certification. So it's changed a lot of our scheduling aspects and how we get everybody the mandatory requirements, plus the additional trainings we like our officers to have as well.
Now getting back to Christopher and Christian, normally you would go to police academy, mm-hmm. you'd be living there and doing all the training, etc. That isn't the case. You're doing like a hybrid model. So tell me, you know, Christopher, how are you dealing with that? Because as the training sergeant just said, you're doing a lot of stuff online, which can be very tiring, actually, because it's sort of, you really have to focus, and it's a very different sort of like way of learning, isn't it?
It's very tiring in a sense, but at the same time, I'm lucky to have two other recruits in the room with me. So during breaks, we're able to discuss everything that goes on. So, because there's some recruits that are at home alone, so they don't have that camaraderie building up. And although we're not building a big camaraderie group like the military, because we're away from everybody, but at least I get the other two, and I'm going to be working with them when I'm at Waterford as well. So that's going to be excellent. But the classes online, to me, it makes sense because it's all lecture based. So to me, we don't know any different, so it's fine. We learn what we can on the computer, and then when we do the hands on stuff, we're there doing it hands on. So I don't know any better just because I've never done the academy before. So you know, it's fine for me. It is what it is. So I don't see any issues going forward with it.
Have you been to the academy at all since this started?
We have, just for certain hands-on days, for different motor vehicle stoppings. We did DUI stops up there. A lot of our arrest and control hands-on we do up there as well. And then, of course, the range, you know, going to the shooting the pistol and everything.
Because one of the reasons for asking that is I've noticed you've got the traditional, like, no hair haircut.
Yes, they kept us. Yeah, we still have to shave and everything.
And Christian, what about for you? Because you're going to be starting soon, is that correct? So just talk me through how it's going to be for you.
Yes, so this coming Friday will be my first day, my orientation day. That following Monday, I'll be commuting Monday through Friday. So it's a little bit different scenario than him because I'm going to actually be going there commuting Monday through Friday. Obviously, the normal thing is having to sleep there. So the commuting every day should be, you know, I'm okay with it.
That's a bit of a drive because the academies are what, in the western part of the state?
It's in Meriden. So it's about
central,
an hour drive.
Yeah, so that's a fair old commute.
Definitely.
And how do you feel about that? Are you happy about doing it that way as against, obviously, Christopher's doing it a different way? I mean, what are your thoughts on that? Because it's two very different learning models here.
I'm happy to be going there and getting the one-on-one, a physical, hands-on type of training. I know with his circumstance, it's kind of out of his hands. But I think either way, we're both glad to be just getting some type of training.
Yeah, just grateful, yeah.
So getting back to you, Dave, I mean, the fact that the guys are doing two different training models, is that partly because, one, that's just how it is, and two, because there are restrictions on how many people can actually be inside, you know, I'm calling it a venue, but because there's still those restrictions. So is that why it has to continue to be this of like one, you know, model for one model for another? And I'm guessing it will be a different model for somebody else.
Right. Yeah. Originally it was all through Zoom because they didn't have anybody staying up there. Even the state police who share the building, they didn't have their class started remote as well. They've slowly been bringing people back into the building, setting up kind of restrictions as far as who can go where and some of the, you know, control measures because of COVID. So that's why Christopher's class originally isn't going there for any of the classroom portions. When they do their practical stuff, it's outside or in larger areas, the gym or whatever the room in the field house they call it. So different areas like that where they can be spread out. So now that some of the restrictions have been lifted, they're going to allow like Christian's class to go back, use the classroom portion of it, but they still won't be using the dining halls, they won't be using the dormitories and things like that because the troopers are there now with their trooper training class. It's my understanding they have them spread out a little bit as well.
So to a certain degree, is there a little bit more on-the-job training happening now because of this, if that's the right terminology?
I think there will be. Like I said, they give us some tasks where the Waterford PD, we have to do hands-on training with the recruits, which normally would be handled during the academy. Mm-hmm. So we taught them motor vehicle stops. They did classroom portion through Zoom about proper vehicle positioning and body positioning and stuff like that. Then we had a couple of our officers here take them for two separate days and actually do practical exercises, actually try, in the back lot here and controlled measures. You know, we went from very simplistic stops up to felony stops, high risk. So it gives us a little bit more of hands-on, which is more of a burden for us, but some of the ways that Waterford does things compared to different agencies, you know, we kind of have some departmental preferences. So it is kind of nice to us to get to see them, then to see us get used to us and kind of the way we do things.
Do you think it builds the camaraderie up quicker here? I mean, you're a smaller force. You're about, 50 officers all told, a smaller police department. Do you think this actually works out better, even though it is causing, obviously, logistic challenges?
Yeah, it builds some of the camaraderie. I mean, it's, in the past, really, the officers on the road didn't know who the recruits were until they came back from the academy. That's pretty much how it was. And then they started to say, hey, who's that guy? Who's that guy? So now to see them in the building every day, they're starting to put a face to them. You know, when they have lunch in our lunchroom. So there's other officers that come in. So you start to get some of that dialogue back and forth and kind of that ice-breaking experience. I know that, you know, myself in the training sergeant position, you know, I would have a lot more communication with them while they're in the academy, but they may not get used to talking to the lieutenants as much or the traffic officer or the evidence officer where, you know, these are the people that are helping me with kind of the hands-on aspects of it. So it's just kind of an earlier get to know them, get a feel for them, their personality, and just kind of build some of that relationship with each other.
Now, the other thing I understand is that Waterford PD's had quite a lot of retirements. I suppose when it comes to maybe the smaller forces, people stay for longer because they enjoy the job, clearly. You've had quite a lot of select new recruits, haven't you?
Yeah, we definitely have. We're kind of in a wave where a lot of people retired at the same time. So we've just hired three that just started last week with us, Christian and another kid, Ian, that are going to go to the academy. We hired a retired trooper who's now starting field training. He doesn't have to go to the academy, but he'll field train with us for a couple weeks. We have three in the senior class of the academy, which is Christopher's class. And then we have one that just got out of the academy in May. So that's kind of, plus another one that we're doing a hiring process now. So that's about eight since last November that have been hired. Yeah, of all those that left, I mean, it was only one that left for another job. He actually went to the state police. Everybody else was people that had their 25 years or more with the department. So I think it's just a wave of hiring that they had some 25 years ago. And then, you know, we'll kind of slow down in the process with people that reach that retirement 25-year mark. But it's just kind of it's cyclical, and it just so happens that, you know, the peak of our hiring is happening during this transition with training. So it's kind of the perfect storm when it comes to that.
Doing a quick juxtaposition, we hear about obviously students at school and, you know, they feel like they're missing out a little bit because obviously the experience that they're having to sort of like endure because of COVID-19. Do either of you two feel that you're losing out or that you actually are not actually losing out because of the way that things have actually now turned out because of COVID and, you know, the progression of the training?
There's definitely pros and cons. I have a fiance and two kids at home, so it's, for me, it's great being able to go home every night, see my kids, put them to bed, and everything. Normally, the academy, you'd be there Monday through Friday, so I wouldn't have that. I'd only have the weekends. So I love that aspect of it. And then there's other things that I'm assuming we're missing out on. I don't know any better, you know what I mean? And one big thing is networking with all the other recruits throughout the whole state. And, yeah, we see them maybe four times a month when we go do the hands-on practical skills stuff. But for the most part, we're not getting the real close bonds that all the other recruits from different academies have gotten.
And Christian?
Yeah, I would say a big pro with this situation going on is me commuting every day. I have a young daughter at home, so I'm obviously able to put her to bed every night and stuff like that. But just as if he said, if we were sleeping there and we had the full-on experience, I think that we'd be able to build a bond and relationships with people from other departments and kind of have them help us out. You know, we all help each other out to be successful.
Gentlemen, it's been a pleasure talking to you. Christopher, Christian, we wish you the best of success in becoming Waterford police officers. Thank you for your time. And Dave, training sergeant, obviously, thank you ever so much. And to the three of you, thank you for your service.
Thank you.
Green Valley Tree LLC is proud to sponsor Connecticut East This Week. Contact Green Valley Tree LLC for all your tree removal and plant health care needs and more. Find us at greenvalleytreeworks.com or call 860-234-4041.
Time now for a look at some of the other stories making the headlines in the region recently. In the Connecticut Examiner, Connecticut's approved rates for health insurance premiums in 2021 are vastly lower than what companies have requested, according to the final rulings released by the Connecticut Insurance Department. The approved average rate increase was 0.01% for individual plans and 4.1% for group plans. Last year, the average increase for individual and group plans were 3.9% and 9.19%, respectively. The department said in a press release that it expects the proposed changes to save 214,600 Connecticut residents some $96 million. In a public hearing on September 2nd, the insurance companies defended their proposed increases, arguing that in spite of record profits due to a decrease of elective procedures during the pandemic, the companies expect claims to rebound in the coming months. In the day this week, the state took the unusual move of ordering the closure of the troubled Three Rivers Healthcare Nursing Home in Norwich, where 22 residents and 6 staff became infected with COVID-19. The move came after a temporary manager determined the lack of staff, infection controls, and other safety problems could not be corrected by the September 30th state deadline. State Acting Commissioner of Public Health Deirdre Gifford and several Department of Public Health staff, local legislators and Mayor Peter Nystrom attended a news conference outside Norwich City Hall to announce the closure and the procedure for relocating residents from the 60 Crouch Avenue facility owned by JACC Health Centre of Norwich. Gifford said since late July 22nd, nursing home residents and 6 staff have become infected with COVID-19 and 4 residents of the home had died. Later during the news conference, State Senator Kathy Austin said the COVID-19 related death toll is likely 5 at the nursing home. In the Norwich Bulletin, members of the union representing more than 400 registered nurses at the William W. Backus Hospital in Norwich and its affiliates have authorized a strike over what they say are a host of unaddressed contract negotiation issues. The threat came the same day representatives of the Backers Federation of Nurses, AFT Local 5149, and Hartford Healthcare, which owns Backers, were scheduled to meet. Union members voted to authorize a safety strike, citing supposed bad faith negotiations by the healthcare company and safety concerns. Recently, the hospital announced a Backers nurse and at least eight other employees tested positive for COVID-19. The nurse's contract expired on July 31st after being extended from the end of May. Union Vice President Jessica Harris said hundreds of nurses walking off the job is not inevitable. In the Middletown Press this week, the Common Council in Middletown declared a climate emergency and got the ball rolling on charter revision in an effort to begin working on remedying long-time problems for residents. Mayor Ben Florsheim initiated the charter revision process by beginning a search for committee members. Any revisions to the charter would not go into effect until 2021. On climate change, the council declared a climate emergency and is pushing to end city-generated greenhouse gas emissions by or before December 31, 2030, while adopting techniques to safely reduce carbon emissions. Florsheim has directed all city agency department heads to create plans to reduce emissions. The Clean Energy Task Force hopes the resolution will lead to future legislation and plans to take more concrete steps towards eliminating greenhouse gas emissions in the next months and years. In the Chronicle, and Mansfield Town Council has selected an individual it intends to hire as the new town manager, though he has not officially been offered the job yet. Negotiations are currently underway with the town council awaiting reference checks. Mansfield Mayor Antonia Moran announced during a recent council meeting that Enfield, New Hampshire town manager Ryan Aylesworth has been notified he is the chosen candidate. Aylesworth and two other finalists were interviewed by the town council in late August. Moran said Aylesworth's salary and start date have not been determined and she expected those details to be worked out within the next few weeks. The town manager is the only town employee the town council is responsible for hiring. The compensation range advertised for the town manager position was between $155,000 and $170,000. And Governor Lamont announces new fines for not wearing a mask and for large gatherings. Governor Lamont announced that Connecticut is implementing new fines for violations of some COVID-19 orders, but easing restrictions on travel from states on Connecticut's travel advisory. The new fines are $100 for violating a mask order, $500 for organizing an event that exceeds size limits, and $250 for attending an event that exceeds size limits. Private gatherings are limited to 25 people indoors and 100 outdoors, while outdoor organized gatherings such as concerts in parks are capped at 500 people with social distancing. Law enforcement designees of the local mayor or first selectman or local public health officials can issue fines. Lamont is issuing an executive order about the fines, and Chief Operating Officer Josh Gabal said the state is finalizing an effective date, but it will be soon. The governor explained that the fines give local health officials a little more leverage when people break the rules, while Gabal said the fines are in response to multiple requests from police, municipalities, and health officials. He said the first tool that those municipal partners have is a misdemeanor, which many found excessively harsh, and so this executive order gives law enforcement and officials another set of tools in the toolkit to help ensure people were following requirements at the local level. As for the travel advisory, Lamont explained that he's simplifying the guidance by allowing people to get a negative test result 3 days before traveling rather than quarantining for 14 days, though the latter is still preferred. That's all from us for this edition. Do send us your questions and story ideas to the show via our website at connecticut-east.com or Facebook or Twitter at Connecticut East, where you can also listen to the show again on demand. And please like, follow, and share on your social media platforms too. I'm Brian Scott Smith. Thank you for listening.